Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes, and it's double guest time. It's one thing to get one of the members of this family in the studio. It's twice as nice when there's two of them. And, of course, they have their own intros. Here we go.
It's called Inception.
Hans Zimmer still says, not enough.
We're up to 18.
Brian Hartz is here, and if that wasn't enough, his lovely wife is here.
Duh.
You're not my supervisor.
Duh.
You're not my supervisor!
Duh.
You're not my supervisor!
Ooh,
She's got a weapon! Drop it!
You're not my supervisor!
Duh.
Bear claws, wow! 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 Bear claws, wow!
Duh!
Who the hell drilled my box?
So, we're just done with phrasing, right? That's not a thing anymore?
Duh!
Do you think that's wise?
This is so boring and forever taking.
Duh.
Jimmy, 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 Jimmy!
I'm not tasering you, so just...
Kill me!
Thank you.
Duh.
She's so weird. Hey, will you choke me a little bit?
And Monica Hartz is here.
You're like the Philip Glass of slightly inappropriate cartoon sounds.
Also known as your pledge dollars at work.
I am a sustaining member, so
thank you.
I feel like I'm at least paying my own way.
You're checking in to see where the money's going? Yeah, that.
My eyes are watery.
You're welcome. Thank you. Also, the Logan and Jean Grey of Film Sociology here. And that's,
thank you.
Howdy.
Yes. And
I look exactly like Hugh Jackman, radio listeners.
I sing like Hugh Jackman. No, that's really.
I wish I sang like Hugh Jackman.
So do we.
You'd like to be a baritone?
Anyway, good to have you guys here. And, of course, the goal is to get all three Hartses here in the room.
Yes.
So, but you know, she's still in training.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we'll save her music for Christmas. So.
Yes.
So, all right. Actually, speaking of Hans Zimmer, he did the music for the film I saw that opened in theaters this weekend.
All right.
So
I know roughly what it sounded like then.
I believe you once described it as 4/4 with lots of cellos.
More or less. Yeah.
but we are in the midst of Grown Up movie season, and we're all thankful for it. And yes, opening in theaters is Widows, the newest film from director Steve McQueen, who of course won Best Director for 12 Years a Slave. And this time around, it's set in modern day Chicago, and the widows of several seedy characters find out that their husband stole money that belongs to somebody very, very powerful, and now the bill has been flipped over to the ladies, which includes Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez.
Ooh.
So they, yeah, this is a crackerjack cast of folks, and the ladies have to pull off the heist. So think of a more aggressive Ocean's 8, but more interesting shot because of Steve McQueen, who's given us 12 Years a Slave and Shame and the film that has lots of Michael Fassbender naked. That's not the title, but it eludes me at the moment. Actually, why don't I check now that I've actually said that?
I thought that was Shame.
You're right. No, Hunger. Hunger, I was thinking of. But yeah, Hunger and Shame and 12 Years a Slave. Ed Johnson had a different title for it. I can't tell you on the air right now. I'll tell you later. But you have Viola Davis, who's always solid, and she is surrounded by Michelle Rodriguez. You have folks like Liam Neeson, who's used very smartly in flashbacks because he's married to the Viola Davis character. John Berthold is in this. Robert Duvall, Colin Farrell.
Wow.
We have, where is it? Daniel Kaluuya, for you fans of Get Out. He is in this as a really wonderful heavy. Jackie Weaver. So, and it's one of those, it's great that all of these actors want to work with Mr. McQueen and what he's capable of. This is also co-written by Steve McQueen and Gillian Flynn, for you fans
Ooh.
Of Gone Girl. So, yes, there is a bit of girl power as far as planning the heist, doing the heist. But the fact that Steve McQueen, who is a really, really good director and really knows his way around a camera, and he's able to do something than just a step above, doing basically a step above the average heist film. I mean, it's, you know, it's fun to see a director with the skill do a genre picture, and he does it, and he does it well. It's solid, solid stuff.
Yeah, it's been really weird hearing the promos for Widows advertised, you know, an action movie as from the director of 12 Years a Slave. It's like, they are not messing around, are they?
No, and it was fun. I saw this Friday morning at 10:30 with that group I affectionately call the old, the unemployed, and the weird. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly old, and they were into it. It was fun hearing a morning crowd get into it as opposed to just sloths who just wander in and watch stuff. So if it sounded fun on a Friday morning, Friday night, Saturday night with a full house is going to be a lot of fun. So I try not to do is it best picture material because, well, now it's up to 10 options. But it's just a fun night of film. So
that's always a good thing.
Yeah. So that's what it does. That's what it delivers. So mission accomplished on that. It's funny because I talked a couple weeks ago about sometimes we just need escape, and that's why we do theater and film mm-hmm. and other forms of art. And something like I talked about the night Emma and I saw Bohemian Rhapsody,
mm-hmm.
which, looking back at it, is a standard biopic. I mean, it's the biopics, the music biopics that Walk Hard made fun of years ago, but they still keep making them because it's kind of cinematic comfort food. And we saw it the day we had to put our cat Curious to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
So as far as, and having to watch my daughter go through this, also not fun. So the fact is, the film did its job. even though I know it's not the greatest cinematic wonder. So
yeah. That actually sounds very much like something said by a gentleman who passed this week, Stan Lee.
And we will be getting to
the value of entertainment.
Two major dead people we like in a minute, but I do want to get through what else is going on around theater. So yeah, go check out Widows and see that on a big screen and with a full house. And I tend to also be one that says an audience's reaction doesn't do anything for me when it comes to my opinion of the film. I've heard people applaud a crap, at the multiplex, but this one should be exceptionally fun with a crowd. Okay, depending on when you're listening to this show, at IU Cinema down in Bloomington at 4:00, you can see director puppeteer Jacob Graham and the film, the documentary, The Creatures of Yes Interactive Workshop. And then at 7:00, as a part of the International Art House series, The Great Buddha. November 18th, Sunday. And these are, I love IU Cinema's double features. They are not actually double features, but you have a chance to see two movies. They're just really random and they're fun. So Sunday at 1:00, Ingmar Bergman's Winter Light, followed by 2017's International Art House series, I Am Not a Witch.
Huh.
Well, we did do the nose and the hat. it's not that one.
I was thinking more, I'm not a witch, I'm your wife. But that's another,
right.
That's another dead person.
Nice. Monday, November 26, 7:00, Oleg's Choice, the Russian documentary, with director Elena Voloshin, who is supposed to be present. This is the type, it reminds me of course, film sociology alumni emeritus Kobe Slagle and his lovely wife Bianca.
Hi, Kobe.
Happy. I thought of them because there's a trailer for Mary Queen of Scots with Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie. And I'm like, Kobe's not going to that. Bianca and her mom definitely going to that. But this is like a Russian documentary that I think, you know, Bianca would want to watch. And then Kobe would go, well, how about we watch Jackie Brown? No, I got to be in the mood. I got to be in the mood to watch Jackie Brown. So love you guys. Thursday, November 29th at 7:00. So, this is next week. So we're planning ahead. Director Sarah Driver will be here for the documentary Boom for Real, The Late Teenage Years of Jean-Michel Basquiat. It is Jean-Michel, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, cool. Well, because Michael Doucet of Cajun band Beau Soleil fame, it's Michael, it's not Michel. So I'm always pardoning my French. Friday, November 30th, Sarah Driver at 7:00 and Sleepwalk at 10:00. And then Saturday, December 1st at 4:00 from 1983, You Are Not I. And then at 7:00, Jurassic Park.
Ooh.
So all of that is happening at IU Cinema.
Is that the one that's that used to be the Von Lee down there on Kirkwood?
The one? No, this is one that's near the theater building on campus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I need to get back down to Bloomington.
Well, we have to work on that. We're always for the film sociology field trip or remote.
Yes.
There you go.
Frightening.
Live remote.
Oh, God. new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, The Meg. It's supposed to be Jason Statham.
It's not about a woman named Margaret.
No, it's not. But if I knew there was going to be a moment of Jason Statham beating the crap out of a shark with his bare hands, maybe.
But is there not?
I don't know. I doubt there.
You know, Samuel Jackson popping in to say he's had it with his mother.
Well, he did a monologue and then it got devoured in Deep Blue Sea.
He has put in his shark movie time.
He's gotten eaten by a lot of creatures. Dinosaur, shark.
But the check's clear.
Heck yeah.
So he's got that going for him.
That's true.
Also on Blu-ray and DVD, Mile 22, the latest collaboration with Mark Wahlberg and director Peter Berg doing looking like real life. I'm not sure. I can't remember if this one's based on a true story or not, on
that
actual
one
events.
Flew right under my radar.
Exactly. And also Alpha, which I know Chris Lloyd really, really liked. Basically a boy and his dog, only it's a Cro-Magnon and his wolf.
Yeah.
So,
and also not to be confused with Don Johnson's Boy and His Dog.
Directed by L.Q. Jones. And yes, I have it on Blu-ray.
Naturally.
We expect nothing less.
Have you shown that to your lovely wife?
No.
It's really okay.
I have to be in the mood.
Might have to borrow it from you on Blu-ray.
She's so funny. All right.
Pretty.
So, not so new things on Blu-ray, unless you've got more new releases.
No, that's really about it. It was a light week. So.
We've, uh, A couple of new things come into the Criterion Collection. I know Some Like It Hot is hitting Blu-ray on Tuesday with the Criterion release.
Correct.
Which you can pick up for 50% off at Barnes & Noble now.
Oh, okay, I'm glad you said it. I didn't. So, that's... yeah, you know where you can get. You mean that place where you can get physical copies of movies?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, it's a physical location. You actually drive to it
and make human contact.
Yes. Yes.
I know. That's just the craziest thing. Well,
sometimes you can actually pay cash.
Oh, now that's just crazy talk.
I know.
That's so non-Orwellian of you.
What's cash?
Straight, homie.
See, there was this musician once.
Oh my gosh.
She's young, but she's not. And by the way, I finally get to say to you in person, you're a man. You're 40.
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the Mike Gundy Club.
It's a good club to be in.
Yeah, it is. But yes, you can go to Criterion. I think it's till the end of the month,
I think. It is, yeah.
But some titles scheduled for January and February releases, In the Heat of the Night, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, Mikey and Nikki... Notorious. I'm really looking forward to that. 24 frames.
It's been out of print for a minute, hasn't it?
It has. So it's got and for the Blu-ray, I'm sure they've souped it up a little bit. For February, To Sleep with Anger, Death in Venice, Berlin Alexander Platz, if you got a couple days to kill, La Vierte, and Ingmar Bergman's Shame. So
they're in the wake of Orient Express, aren't they gearing up for a new Death on the Nile, too?
Possibly. That's a lot of that. So, all right. And, wow, it is mid-November and the skyline in Shelbyville is still open. So if you want to see The Grinch and Bohemian Rhapsody in a drive-in in Indiana in November, go for it.
Is that a double feature?
It is a double feature. That's a legit double feature.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
go take yourself some hot cider.
Yes, if they're not showing it already. And I guess you're hoping for the kids to fall asleep. By the time, well, at least halfway through, at least when Freddie Mercury has at least a house big enough that he has rooms for his individual cats, that's a fun moment. So, all right, I want to start with, we have some dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. But I got a little bit of audio I want to share, and we'll talk about this impact in a little bit.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal. Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Do you read me, Hal?
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, Hal?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
Hal, I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, you're going to find that rather difficult.
Hal, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Hal? Hal. Hal.
Yep, that's Douglas Rain, the voice of HAL 9000 from Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. He passed away November 11th at the age of 90 in Stratford, Ontario, of all places.
Oh, he was Canadian. And
yep.
While I understand that he had you know, quite a career on stage in Canada, his filmography is you know, comparatively limited, but if he had never done anything else
exactly
but record the voice of Hal, he would still be a legend.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and going back, it's one of those, it's, you know, it's kind of the that guy, that lady thing. What else has this person done? Or when I know when a TV actor passes away, I also like to say, well, what films were they working on when the series was on hiatus? So mm-hmm. Going back to Douglas Rain's information, born March 1928 in Winnipeg. First noted credit was a TV series called Scope, where he played Laertes in an episode of Hamlet.
Okay.
That's 1955.
Right. Very, very calm Laertes.
There you go. Yeah. Now, it would be fun if he did all the roles like HAL 9000.
Yes.
You know, Henry the Fifth doing some
Crispin's. Pretty relaxed sword fight there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see, 1957, played a messenger in a film version of Oedipus Rex. Easy jokes there. Appeared in TV series Folio, On Camera, TV movie of The Hill, Hudson's Bay, a TV show's Star Time, Encounter, 1+1 in 1961. Played Malvolio in a 1964 television version of Twelfth Night.
Huh.
Who else was in this? Nobody. Oh, Michael Learned was Countess Olivia.
Well, there you are.
Whoa. Okay. So seek that out. Henry V, we meant. Yeah, I played Henry V in the 1966 TV version of Henry V. So my smart aleck remark actually could have happened. No, it wouldn't. He's a pro. Man, and so that, yeah, all of that, 2001, BBC Play of the Month. He played Stefano in The Tempest. Mm-hmm. Here's, oh my gosh, I forgot about this. Uncredited, he is the voice of the evil computer in Woody Allen's Sleeper.
Yep.
Wow.
Deliberate casting there.
Toonie Lair, 1974. Sam Hughes' War, 1984. Of course, he was in 2010. Love and Larceny and the Russian-German War in 1995. So thank you, Hal. But yeah, do you have an actual number where he was on the AFI list?
I found him. Yeah, he's number 13 on the AFI's top 50 villains of all time. He's right behind Alex DeLarge from another Kubrick film, Clockwork Orange.
There's a
wow. So.
Not a double feature to watch, folks.
Interestingly,
no,
Kubrick
no.
actually discovered Douglas Rain because he was a narrator for a Canadian documentary about space that he saw at the World's Fair.
Wow.
That's my computer voice, I guess.
Okay, excellent. So there you go. So, I mean, this man's legacy will go on forever so long as there are physical copies and digital copies of movies. So there is that. Now, initially, I asked you guys on here because of the death of Stan Lee, because I know you guys are bigger and better comic person people than I. But I was explaining to the 17-year-old about how much of an impact he had with his comics mm-hmm. in the means of race relations, mm-hmm. Gender issues, politics at that time. I guess, Brian, Monica, give us your path with the work of Stan Lee.
I'll let you go ahead.
Ladies first, apparently.
She's more of the X-Men expert.
I am. So my main touchstone with Stan Lee's work is, of course, X-Men, and more specifically, the Dark Phoenix saga, both the early work, the actual official Dark Phoenix saga, but then her subsequent storylines throughout the comic books and the movies. And the X-Men in general were just really relatable because it was this whole group of people, each of whom was different than the normal, quote, humans around them, and trying to kind of find their way. And I was a really weird kid, and I was a misfit, and I didn't have many friends. And then later in life, I started to really identify with Jean Grey and her kind of alter ego as the Phoenix and the Dark Phoenix, just coping with this thing over which she had no control. And then the ultimate message of her story is that all of her struggles are overcome when she is shown and understands how much everyone around her loves her and how much love she is capable of both giving and receiving. And that kind of brings the phoenix back down and allows her to rein it back in. So that's just always been really personal to me. And it was just that's my Stanley story. What's yours?
Well, I mean, I you know, was born in the 70s, grew up on, Spider-Man on the Electric Company and the Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno.
Sad hitchhiking music.
Yeah. Never known a world without Stan Lee's characters. And, don't remember when I first became conscious of Stan Lee as a person. He was just sort of a force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
The driving force behind popularizing Marvel. And, in terms of just the impact of the characters on pop culture and the pithy phrases that he had a knack for creating, like with great power comes great responsibility from Spider-Man. People quote that and don't even know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't compare him to Shakespeare exactly that way, but there are nevertheless when something that you've written or something that you've created jumps into the zeitgeist, and people who don't even have any baseline familiarity with your work are quoting it, you've achieved something, which is ironic considering that he, made it into the comic business as a kind of a backstop because he never got to write the great American novel, but ended up having a great deal more influence on the great American culture.
Yeah,
yeah, most definitely. I mean, and I say, how is his record been? I was thinking of, because I wrote on Facebook the other day about Elmore Leonard, the great Elmore Leonard, and his up and down relationship with Hollywood. How do you have an idea how his track record with the studios were, even going back to, God, yeah, like I said, like the 70s, I think, is when the cartoon started for his work.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were cartoons as early as the 60s, almost as soon as the ascendancy of Marvel, hit full swing in the 60s under his leadership. And I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout-out to the other members of the triumvirate, Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, who co-created all those characters and arguably didn't get enough credit. But that's a story for another day. But, they've been in the popular imagination for a long time. Now, I think one of the reasons why they didn't hit the big time until this century was because of the technology hadn't caught up with the characters.
Right.
So you got the chintzy slow-mo editing of the Incredible Hulk transformation.
Yeah.
There's that. You had a man, his Linda Carter stunt double, but I know that's a different world.
That's
but
DC.
Yeah, this is an example of kind of on the cheap, and there's a Roger Corman Fantastic Four that you're not supposed to see.
And there was in development. It seems like James Cameron's Spider-Man spent in the entirety of the 90s in development hell and never came to fruition. But then Sam Raimi finally got that going, and along with the X-Men of 2000.
That movie.
That train just hadn't stopped.
Yep.
No, I remember when X-Men came out, and I was 13, and
oh, thanks.
I'm sorry.
No,
aging
you're not.
Myself
okay.
Here.
You no. You're aging. You're aging me. Really, you're fine.
Oh,
he's
you've 40
already, though.
You've
already he's
outed
a man.
My age.
Still
we
the
all
old,
know how old I am.
Still the oldest one on the show at the moment. So,
but like I remember. You want to talk about like a couple of different ways of tying the X, like about how Stan Lee was important to me, like the X-Men, seeing them on film was amazing, and like the technology when they like Mystique's transformation, and that's just, of course, it also introduced me to Hugh Jackman and that lifelong
thing.
One-sided
I'm sure
love
you would
affair.
Like to be personally introduced to him at some
I
point.
Would yes absolutely please but then like
we'll
also,
be over here
right just bring that home And then
I'll be fangirling over him too.
You would be.
About?
Ditto.
Would.
Yeah, it's really okay.
But also the X-Men film, it really like it was so powerful. It was so powerful for me emotionally. But then the music was what actually got me really into film soundtracks, which is another way that I connect with this guy, but
this
also
guy.
With you, Mr. Sosi.
Well, thank you.
And
like you, I also see you as Famke Janssen, obviously.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Brian, you gotta. There's a great way to die if you play your cards right. And
right.
Those who are fans of Pomka Jansen know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. All right.
I tried to put it in the voicemail. It didn't translate. Welcome to Inside Joke Theater, folks.
Yes. Oh man.
Anyway, you were in mid pondering.
Oh no, it was just I just remember when that movie came out and with how big it was. Like I was not really. I was young and I was not as big of a nerd, I guess. So I wasn't into the comic book community. But when the movie became a big deal, I was just kind of opened up to this whole world. Like, oh, there are other people who not only feel this way, but also like this stuff and these stories. And this is really great. And I didn't feel quite so weird and alone.
You're in the land of misfit
people.
People. Yeah, that's us.
Toys.
We have Charlie in the boxes down the hall. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking of the other. You mentioned the fact that technology is caught up and the timing was right. So, you know, kudos to him. It's Stan Lee in the last, 18, 19, 20 years or so. It's been like watching Christopher Lee and his Act Three. Mm-hmm. You know, latching on to Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and being aware of his presence, of his impact. And it seemed like most of the time when the films of his work were made, everybody involved really, really wanted to get it right, obviously, or else he wouldn't do cameos for it, mm-hmm. unless they just, you know, wrote him a big-ass check anyway, but they still did it. But I think it seemed like there was that whole wanting to please him and respect mm-hmm. his work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I think is really cool is, like, but in the beginning of Marvel and with the development of all the different universes and storylines and characters, that happened over, you know, 40, 50 years. And then over the past maybe 18 years or so, we have had this, it's kind of like a compressed reliving of that cultural revolution and that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really neat because it's showing not only the continuity and the cultural value of the stories that he both created and fostered the creation of, but like that it's intergenerational as well, that it continues to be relevant and that mm-hmm. it continues to be so deeply meaningful to people.
Mm-hmm. And then even in terms of the industry, it's interesting that in the last decade or so, thanks in part to, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and some of the other major franchises that Hollywood now hangs its hat on, the way that Stan Lee influenced and guided the Marvel culture through the 60s by turning it into a publishing behemoth by just churning out titles in a factory-like manner, mm-hmm. where he and Kirby and Ditko were all just collaborating so closely on all these comics that it was almost impossible to see where the influence of one person ended and the others began. But it was he was riding herd on the whole thing to make sure there was some continuity. And ironically, that's how the film industry has become, where you know, you've got these sprawling franchises guided by this sort of central command and control, where it's not necessarily about the individual filmmakers and movies that are part of it, but this overarching whole where you just got to keep cranking out product and somebody's got to be there managing it.
Yeah, looking at the titles, and I pulled up Stanley's IMDb page for his acting, so you know, all of the things like himself and Pageant Judge and stuff like that. But I know we're in a time, and I this is where I kind of get curmudgeon-y of where, you know, you can turn a franchise around. They've done that with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. They're now on the third incarnation. You know, the joke is, you know, the kid and the aunt get younger and younger. I think Ariel Winter is playing the aunt in the next film.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
yeah.
not really happening. But I mean, so, and I know part of it is Sony doesn't want to let that go. What I battle with being an old curmudgeon-y film critic is the fact that they are now able to churn them out and reboot them so fast.
Yeah.
And yet I own every James Bond film.
Yep.
So
but those aren't remakes. Those are
and these aren't remakes. Like Spider-Man, you know, he's not doing the stuff. He's not fighting the same storyline. So it's not that. But that's my count. You know, that should be a counter, and that has been thrown in my face, not by my family actually, and I'm kind of surprised it didn't. But it's one of those things I
Come
have
on,
to
step it up, Lynn and Emma.
They have other things to do than to prove me wrong.
just to needle you
all
day?
That's just their pastime at home.
Yeah, anyway. God, where's BB's intro music? All right. No. So anyway, but going to see the stuff. I mean, the track record for me, it's been really, really solid. I tend to sit in, go into the theater going, God, another Marvel film. And then once I'm in it, it's really well done.
There it is. Mm-hmm.
It's really well done.
There are literally only like two Marvel films that I have not really liked.
And
so
those were?
I don't really like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh. Okay.
I've fallen asleep watching both of them.
Both of them?
Yeah. Like, I really like, I like the characters. I really, really like Rocket Raccoon.
You like to listen to him, too?
I do.
How many times have you seen A Star Is Born?
No, I actually haven't seen it
yet. We'll work on that.
Yeah, I know.
Thanksgiving's
coming
like,
up. But they're good every single time. I mean, I don't know how many times I've watched the original Iron Man. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Not just because of Robert Downey Jr.
And to your point, there are some franchises that have had the endless reboots, but by and large the Marvel universe has maintained a staggering amount of internal consistency among like 20 films now.
Yeah.
Which is just, I can't imagine what the task must be like to just manage the continuity of storylines and characters and everything.
I think it's really cool from a writer perspective.
And, yeah. and if you've ever,
be the coolest
which is,
job.
Which exactly mirrors, what producing a whole series of comics.
Mm-hmm.
Is
correct. Mm-hmm. Or, and if you're a fan of South Park, they parody the giant wall of where things are happening and when.
Connected
and,
by bits of string, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Presided over by
pintack,
people in
like,
right. Chinese takeout boxes.
Okay. Am I too curmudgeon-y that at the end of Infinity War?
We haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Do you know what's happening?
We're behind.
I'm going to be vague. Do you have you been able to elude yourself as to what happens?
I know one who goes.
Oh, okay. So you know the concept of what's happening.
Yeah.
Am I curmudgeon-y and thinking they're going to bring him back?
No.
They're gonna come back, or at the very least, they'll have a glow about them,
I mean,
and they'll wave,
well,
like at the end
like,
of Star
that
Wars.
That is a hallmark of the Marvel universe,
and
the Marvel comic
universe.
They always come back.
In fact, somebody even made a joke about that. Somebody was like, "Well,
I think
I'm
yeah,
so
Stan
sad
Lee
about
died.
Stan Lee
yeah.
dying." It's like, "Oh, you don't read comics? Just wait till next week's issue."
Right. Okay. So I was pulled out of it when. People my age, it's one thing if you're a kid, I get it, but if you're my age, and again, these are people who are probably way more into the universe than I am, but hearing them gasp and hearing, I just kind of said they're going to come back.
It's
so,
like, there's still a lot to be sad, though.
Yes, that's true. Okay,
and,
see,
and
you
what
put
does
me,
it say?
Thank you, Lynn.
What
you're
does
welcome.
It say about those films that they can make?
They
you
have
know,
that big
people
of an
in their 40s gasp with shock over a mm-hmm. beloved childhood character.
Yes.
Yes.
By the way, these two are allowed to stay on my lawn.
Thank you.
So, I would say
remember to bring the tent. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, no, we have a guest room. Come on. I'm not that cruel. Weird.
What if we
cruel.
Like camping?
Well, you are in theater.
We are.
Ah! Because it's a term and it's
silly.
That's right. Yeah, if you're trying to bring back vaudeville in any way, shape, or form possible. All right, so, yes, salute to Stan Lee. I know there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be watched this week. And then at the time of this recording, We are reminded that really Hollywood doesn't know anything, thanks to William Goldman, another guy. If let's here we go here's I go to his IMDb. I'm going to rattle it off because list reading is exciting radio.
Yes.
And we will listen in silent awe at this list because this is a list.
This
for silent
is
awe.
Not bad. So here we go. 1963, his novel Soldier in the Rain. 1965, screenplay for Masquerade. 1966, screenplay for Harper. Fine detective movie with Paul Newman. 1968, based on the novel, his novel, film version of his novel, No Way to Treat a Lady. Do you know this?
Don't know that one.
This is, okay, it's a serial killer playing cat and mouse with the detective. The detective is George Segal. The damsel in distress is Lee Remick. And the killer, because he gets to do multiple characters and disguises, 1968 Rod Steiger.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. There's some major chewage, and it's fun.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So,
is there an eye patch involved at any point? It feels like Rod Steiger's in an eye patch half the time.
Something like that. I still, my favorite moment, well, there was an interview with Steiger that was, I think it was called 60% Artist, 40% Whore, about his film work, and he was on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher back when it was on ABC, and they had like a minute left. They were out of idea. I think they were just out of content, and the credits were rolling, and Bill Maher just looked at Steiger and went, look, we should just do a minute of Il Duce. And he stood up and screamed in Italian for a solid minute. Thank you, Rod. But anyway, 1968, No Way to Treat a Lady. 1969's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance
yes.
Kid. Yeah.
Goldman wrote in his prologue to The Princess Bride, he wrote, when I die, if the Times gives me an obit, it'll be for Butch. And looking at all the obits today online, every single one of them leads with Butch.
Yeah, every single one.
That is, well, you know, every buddy cop film, any buddy action film of any kind, of any gender, owes a debt to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Sure does.
And I tried showing it to the little one when she was younger, and it didn't quite pan out, so I'm hoping that we can try that again.
And I looked for that on my shelf this morning when I got the news and realized it wasn't there, so... Uh-oh. Radio listeners, if I loaned it to you and you haven't returned it, I'd
you
like that back,
too?
Please.
He wants it back because he has to show it to me because, gasp, I haven't seen it.
I'm sorry, Matthew.
No. Oh, look, we all have them. We all have them. Especially when it's this guy. You haven't seen it. Yeah, it happens. We all have holes in our thing. You've been busy. You have had things to do.
I am finishing my degree.
In?
Oh, medical humanities and epidemiology.
See, there you go. It's also the plug show. We'll get to the podcast in a little bit.
Well, okay.
But no, Butch and Sundance, absolutely. And no, he did not write the song. It happened. So it just happened. 1972's The Hot Rock screenplay. Contributing writer uncredited for the original Papillon. Of course, the remake has the gentleman who plays Freddie Mercury, who's also an Evansville grad.
Yeah.
1975 screenplay for The Stepford Wives.
Ooh.
Insert your favorite suburban punchline there. 1975's The Great Waldo Pepper. His first Academy? No. Wait a minute. Did he get one for Butch? Hold on. I'm checking. Yes, he did.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
So his first Oscar was for Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. His second one was for adapting All the President's Men.
Nice.
40 years old, still relevant.
Yep.
Still relevant.
This very day, still relevant, as we look at sparring between the press corps and the White House.
Yes, and that happened. And guess what? The judge was appointed by guess who? 1976, this is something I quote constantly. He made the screenplay of his own novel, Is It Safe?, also known as Marathon Man.
Now, that's where I have to fess up and say that's one I haven't seen. I'll get on that.
Have you seen the Olivier scene?
Oh, yes.
The dentist
scene.
Naturally. Yeah, never trust a proctologist who keeps asking, is it safe?
And naturally, everyone knows the legend of the encounter between Hoffman and Olivier.
So, and Hoffman brings it up on Inside the Actor's Studio, and it was not a combative one, as the press had blown it up to be. The story is, of course, Hoffman stayed up all night. He was also going through a rough divorce and, I guess, spent all night at Studio 54. And the next morning, yeah, I know. Well, it's 1975.
Yeah, you know, like you do.
So he is, it's a scene where he's going to be interrogated by Laurence Olivier. And so he stayed up all night and just slumped in the chair waiting for his co-star to show up, who arrives fresh as a daisy, takes his coat off, gets his tea, gets his biscuits, and sees that his co-star is just worn for wear. And it's like, what is wrong? And we're paraphrasing. And Hoffman, you know, said, I stayed up all night. And Olivier replied, it's called acting, dear boy. Try it sometime.
Yep.
So, yeah. So there was that. You had the two different methods of and then Hoffman told on to Lipton a wonderful story. And I've actually shared this. We now quote this at home. Because, you know, Olivier in his later years, he was sick for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, every project that he worked on, it looked like it was going to be his last project. They said that about Dracula in 1979, and he lived for another 10 years.
Yeah.
So Hoffman talks about the last time he had dinner with him and Joan Plowright, and he starts to well up, and he finally says to Olivier, why do we do what we do? And he gets up as Olivier, gets in Lipton's face, and says, this is what he did to me. I swear to God. He goes, do you want to know why we do what we do, dear boy? Do you want to know why? Look at me. 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 And that was it. You expect, you know, a Shakespearean sonnet or a great lecture as to why we do stuff on the stage. And three simple words. Mm-hmm. Thanks, mm-hmm. Lord Larry. Anyway, so yeah, go check out. Don't go to the dentist and see Marathon Man or vice versa. So anyway, that is out there. 1977's A Bridge Too Far, which had half the Screen Actors Guild. It was one of those films.
They loved those in the 70s.
Yes. Screenplay and did the screenplay for his novel Magic, Anthony Hopkins and a killer ventriloquist dummy. Mm. Anne Margaret, Burgess Meredith. It was the 70s. Mr. Horn. I actually saw this in the theater, and I really wish I didn't. Butch and Sundance, the early days. That was a thing.
That was one of the very first prequels, I guess.
Something like that. He also did the screenplay and novel for his film Heat. Not that one.
Not that
this
one.
This is the one with – it had Burt Reynolds also playing a Mexican. Not quite Touch of Evil level.
Well.
He's a professional guardian, I guess, in Las Vegas. 1987 – you hear Monica's hands clapping in joy. The Princess Bride.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty good there. 1990, Misery.
Mm.
Watch your feet. 1992's Memoirs of an Invisible Man. They're not all perfect.
No.
Year of the Comet, 1992. Chaplin, 1992. Maverick, 1994. He did the screenplay for The Chamber. He did The Ghosts in the Darkness, Da Vinci, uncredited for Fierce Creatures, screenplay for Absolute Power. Around this time, griping at Matt Damon and Ben Affleck for Good Will Hunting, depending on whose side you're with on that one. The screenplay for Hearts of Atlantis.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
Based on that. And he also did Stephen King's Dreamcatcher, another film with flatulence. Wild Card, which was basically Heat, only instead of Burt Reynolds as Jason Statham. Jake and the Giants, Inspired, and then the short 5 minutes that came out earlier this year. So, yeah, pretty good track record there.
And if you ever get the chance to read any of his writing about the film business,
yes,
it is incisive and hilarious and just well worth your time.
A must-have. So
it's interesting because Misery is considered to be one of the better Stephen King adaptations, but Dreamcatcher and Hearts in Atlantis are kind of 50-50.
Well, and I wonder, and this
cast and directed Dreamcatcher, didn't he?
He did. Right. He did. I also wonder, and this is going into the mind of a writer who's no longer with us, of, you know, depending on what the churning out process was. You know, there was a period where a grocery list that Stephen King wrote was in development.
Yes.
Because, you know, everything he touched turned to some form of gold, usually. But I wondered, looking at the list here, because there's some spurts of creativity.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and again, he wrote them at different times and mm-hmm. compared to when the films were released.
Yeah.
But it seems like there has to be a little bit of a glut, mm-hmm. I'm guessing. But yeah, Misery is really, really solid. I know they've made a stage version of it. Nobody's done it around here yet.
Hmm.
And been meaning.
So an adaptation of his screenplay for that?
I believe they did. And I think there was a – I have to look. Actually, I want to check. But actually, while I'm checking, because, you know, we're doing hot
time,
Google –
time to start checking hot, with local production
hot
companies.
Google action here on Film Sociology. Brian, you were mentioning a podcast. Would you do the honors, please?
Oh, yeah. Well, our talk about 2001 reminded me of another podcast I want to give a shout-out to called the Oscar Watch Podcast. You can find that on SoundCloud. My good friend Amy Thomason, another gentleman named Steve Buja, run down past Oscar winners and contenders. And it's a lot of fun. I've been an occasional guest on that, including their episode on 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you can hear us talk a whole lot more about HAL and everything else. There's an upcoming episode that will involve some William Goldman material. We'll on that soon.
Funny, last night I was at Meyer with Emma, and she, well, of course, learns things from YouTube. But she apparently she found a list of the Academy Award-winning films. And I went, oh, there's a list on the internet. Dad has several of them downstairs, that sort of thing. but she said to me, she was stunned that Oliver won Best Picture in 1968. And I said, yeah, you're just catching on to that, huh?
Yeah.
How about knowing that most of my film-watching life, and then, of course, I brought up what wasn't even nominated that year and probably should have won, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
But what was on the ballot, I would still pick Lion in Winter. But
of course. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. A tough... Yeah.
That's our favorite Christmas movie.
Is it really?
Yes.
Have you shown it to BB?
Not yet.
BB, Beatrice is their daughter. And Beatrice is how old now?
4 years old.
Okay.
Well, I'd love to hear her pop out. What should we hang, the holly or each other?
Oh, yes.
Or she comes, I've come to gloat. And don't ever say to her, I just want a little peace. Why a little? How about eternal peace?
We need to start her on her Katharine Hepburn now.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so...
Well, we can start with Philadelphia Story. That's innocuous enough, right?
I meant impression, but yes, also a film education.
You're going to teach her to do young Kate and not old?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I guess, by the way, I apparently have been credited with setting the bar for raising kids via pop culture.
Yes.
Thank you. I guess I'm curious. What is
Emma? You deserve some of that credit.
She deserves a lot of that for putting up with this kook. What's the darkest thing Beatrice has experienced cinematically?
I would probably say Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a big Star Wars fan.
But she's into that as opposed to blindsiding her with a piece of darkness.
No.
Yeah, no. And she's not quite.
Generally okay with scary stuff. She just snuggles up a little closer and you mm-hmm. say, well, do you want us to pause the movie or stop it? Well, you don't have to watch it. No, I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Is it better in the daytime?
No, it doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter? Okay.
No.
Yeah.
She'll watch anything, anytime if you give her the
I'm pretty sure if I turned on Jurassic Park, she would watch it because she loves dinosaurs. I don't want to show her that yet.
Yeah, okay. I can see that.
Because she, like, Land Before Time was a little, the, you
little
know.
Much?
Yeah.
Well,
he was
God, that's traumatic for an adult. Jeez.
Yeah. Now, have you had the moment where you're showing them something and then you realize, oh, God, this isn't going well?
Like, I should not have shown that to them?
Yeah.
Not yet.
No.
We'll keep trying.
I think she did. I do show her occasional clips of Game of Thrones that are very carefully selected. Mostly
you mean
that involve...
she hasn't seen the scenes for the reason why that show is popular?
No. And they mostly involve Daenerys on her dragons. We have very clear endpoints and but she does know what comes after. Like, there's a specific scene where Daenerys is flying on the dragon's back and then subsequently the dragon destroys an entire naval fleet. But I stop it before the fire starts destroying ships.
When the famous Hansen brothers from Slapshot made an appearance at an ice game, I was going to have to take Emma with me. And so I brought her with me, and she even said to the guys, she goes, my daddy showed me when you first arrived, when you had your cars, and your first game. And that's all he would show me. And they are, we know, sweetheart, it's okay. It's all right. Someday you'll watch it when it's older. And,
yeah. You
know. So anyway, my experience was, and this is first off, I didn't watch it in advance. That's major strike. But Emma was interested in food, and we would watch Food Network and Cooking Channel mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And I thought, I'm going to be the good parent. I'm going to teach her. And I tried to show her the documentary Food Inc.
Oh.
So, and for those who don't know, I mean, it is a wonderful documentary, and it talks about what has happened to the food system in this country and the process and everything. Well, the opening scene is in a chicken farm, and there is a scene that's almost out of Soylent Green involving a giant scooper and what happens to chicks who are not big enough.
Yeah.
And Emma freaked out, and so I had to stop it. And for years, we would walk past the Blockbuster, and the film has a very memorable image for their poster. It's a cow with a barcode on it, mm-hmm. and Emma would walk past it and go, "Look, there's the movie I don't like." And it wasn't until, God, I think she was probably 13 or 14, we sat down and watched it again. And mm-hmm. and of course, she busted my chops going through this. She thought, "This is a good idea, huh, Dad?" Shut up, child. So anyway, If anything else, watch it first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah, very good idea. So, okay.
So what has Google returned for
you? Actually, Cincinnati Playhouse just did it earlier this in September.
You don't say.
And there was a Broadway production with Bruce Willis and Laurie Metcalf.
Wow.
I don't know if Bruce cared. Because that's hard to find. That's hard to figure out.
I'm finding it hard to imagine Bruce Willis being able to be audible in a theater past the third row.
Well, it depends on the size of the space. So.
I guess so.
Or is some Misery review from The Guardian, Bruce Willis sighs hard in stage chiller.
Wow.
From The Guardian.
Okay, you're reaching a little too far for that.
And I thought, I want to say there was I thought maybe there was a stage version in London that Sharon Gless did, but this was a while back. So anyway, I guess it is possible. So there you go.
Written down.
Writing
noted.
That down.
Right. Shop that around all our theater producer friends in town.
So yeah, that's a pretty good. So yeah, thank you, William Goldman. Appreciate your work. Got about 4 minutes left. Have you guys watched anything new recently, or old, or what have you shown BB recently?
Well, we actually did just watch the Criterion edition of Princess Bride.
Yeah, that just came out.
It is beautiful.
So yeah, and unfortunately, turned out to be timely.
Yeah, but,
it
will never not be timely.
No, that's true.
I don't think we've shown BB anything new. I keep trying to explain to her how Frozen is actually just a Greek tragedy in Disney form, and she's not really appreciating what, like, a threshold guardian is yet, so...
So you're showing her what, Medea, or...
Yeah, that's a nice thing for kids.
Some other Greek threat? No? Okay. Well, we mentioned Oedipus Rex earlier, but no, it's...
It's true.
It's a different
Let's
love.
Not give the kid any ideas.
No. No, we sadly haven't seen a bunch of new stuff lately.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Hoping to get out around the holidays to see a couple of new things.
I know because next week is Thanksgiving. I know what has become now, and it's been fun to hear this because I have some friends in town that do this. But Home for the Holidays, directed by Jodie Foster with Holly Hunter, among others.
Robert Downey Jr.
And Pieces of April. The misfit daughter, played by Katie Holmes, playing against type, who's having her family over for Thanksgiving in her little tiny apartment with Oliver Platt and Patricia Clarkson. And I believe Clarkson got a supporting actress nomination for this, but those have become a little bit of a Thanksgiving cinematic tradition that are not the obvious choices. These aren't going to be on TNT 24 hours in a row.
Well, that's how we feel about Lion in Winter at Christmas. Like, you know, that's not something you find on the Hallmark Channel.
Thank God.
I would hate to see a Hallmark version of The Lion in Winter.
There was already a remake with Glenn Close and Patrick Stewart.
Which
I think
is not half bad.
Not bad. So,
well, actually, ironically, I think that was a Hallmark production. It just wasn't on the Hallmark Channel.
No, it's that. No, I don't believe
it's
the
like
women.
Hall of Fame.
I don't think the women in their Hallmark jammies and Hallmark Haagen-Dazs.
No, I just want the Hallmark Christmas writers to write a version of The Lion in Winter now.
Oh, really?
Starring Danica McKellar.
Yes. Yes.
That's not bad, actually. Math is hard.
It'll be about an actual lion, though, that they rescue and it teaches them the true meaning of Christmas.
And it'll be voiced by Aubrey Plaza.
Naturally.
Because that's who I thought of when I thought of Grumpy Cat.
Yes.
Anyway, so... All right. Well, guys, once again, plug the
Oscar
podcast.
Watch podcast. You're welcome, Amy and Steve.
And I'm available.
And you know what? Actually, that's
cross pollinate
here. Not a bad idea.
I have nothing to plug.
I'll float it past
Well, you're in studies.
I'm in my senior year of undergrad. I'm applying for grad school.
And you're
Fairbanks School of Public Health.
Not an underwriter, folks. Just saying it. So, all right. Guys, it's always fun to have you guys here.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there.
And have fun storming the castle.
I'm not listening. You're listening to Film Sociology. Oh, I'm sorry.
Anybody want a peanut?
And scene.
What she said. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Stacy.
your land, Sir Doom. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a marriage. But you must keep up off the ship of a bunch of
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!